Mr. Chairman, under tab one, the executive committee report, you'll see some handouts about the new Magnuson Act, as well as a few slides to overview some of the significant changes that will affect the region under the new Magnuson-Stevens Act. The chairman and myself went to Washington in the middle of January, along with the other seven councils, to discuss budget and also to discuss the Magnuson-Stevens Act. And your staff had prepared a number of questions about the new act. In fact, it was, I think it was 4 pages worth, and we were hoping to get a little bit of resolution at the three-day meeting in Washington. But for the most part, the take-home message was that just like the Sustainable Fisheries Act in 1996, the guidelines, in order to prepare the guidelines, it took about a year and a half. And I expect, even though there's a group that's starting to work now on these new guidelines, that it may take that long. So certainly we're not going to wait a year and a half to find out about laps and referenda and what is accountability and what is an annual tack. Is it a hard tack, soft tack? So we're going to have to work very closely with the regional office to meet these new Magnuson requirements right away in the plans we're developing, groundfish, scallops, whiting, and skates. And we'll be meeting with them and working closely to meet these new requirements. What I'm going to do briefly is go through what I consider the four biggest impacts for the region and the nation, and that is annual catch limits, use of our science and statistical committees, limited access privilege programs, LAPs, and NEPA requirements, National Environmental Policy Act. First, yes.
Paul, is that? You said it's under number one. I don't.
Tab one, the executive committee report.
Is it? In the
executive. It's in the executive.
No, it's in the executive committee report.
Okay.
It's a handout. And I think there were copies made for the audience. So. It's an enclosure, John, one of the enclosures. Okay, first thing, annual catch limits. It's now a new required provision for all our fishery management plans. And basically, the councils shall develop annual catch limits for each of its managed fisheries that may not exceed the fishing level recommendations of the SSC or a peer review process. So annual catch limits that don't exceed the levels set or recommended by the SSC. Now, most of our plans now do have annual limits. However, we are developing a whiting and a skate plan that we must put in this plan, annual catch limits. We've never had annual catch limits, to my knowledge, in skates for seven skates, which is going to be very difficult, and for whiting and four or five different hake species or whatever small mesh fisheries we have in that small mesh plan. We're going to have to set annual tacks, annual catch limits, or multi-year specs. So we do have to amend our plans to do that. The second requirement under FMP provisions is that our plans must include measures to ensure accountability. Now, that was one of the first questions we asked in Washington. Does that mean hard tacks? Yes, it does. Does it mean triggers? Yes, it does. Does it mean defaults? Yes, it does. Does it mean paybacks? Yes, it does. Does it mean backstops? Yes, it does. Does it mean we can still use days at sea? Yes, it does. So what I'm trying to tell you is it means everything. We can, right now, there's no guidance that basically says you have to use hard tacks. But what you do have to have in your plans, which means we may have to do amendments on many of them, is you need measures that do not allow you to exceed the tack. Now, they may be paybacks, backstops, hard tacks, defaults, triggers, any number of things, but it isn't status quo that you set days at sea and then you adjust them the next time around. It's got to be built into the plan. That's how we're interpreting it now, but of course we have to wait for the guidelines. But that's critical. That would require many of our plans to be amended to include accountability. The other thing under annual catch limits is that we must complete all these amendments by 2010 for fisheries that are subject to overfishing, and by 2011 for all other fisheries that are not subject to overfishing or in an overfished condition. So what that means, the take-home message is that the ground fish scallop, whiting, and scallop amendments that we're doing now, we should comply or have to comply with these annual catch limits. We certainly don't want to do a plan now and then have to redo it again to meet the 2010 and 11. So the plans we're working on should meet these annual catch limits. SSC requirements, 302, Section 302. Our SSCs are to provide recommendations on acceptable catch levels. So we've got to figure a way of bringing our SSC that we hadn't used in the past to really look at our management measures and our tax setting procedures. We've basically used them to give us advice on conflicting science and inadequate lack of data in developing overfishing definitions. We haven't used them like many of the other councils have in approving tax or approving stock assessments. And we're going to have to look into using our SSC a little differently. We've begun these discussions at the executive committee, but still have a lot of work to do, and we'll work with the with Washington and Pat on further developing our SSC, use of our SSC. It also requires the councils to set annual catch limits that do not exceed, I mentioned that do not exceed the SSC recommendations or another peer review process. And that's where we have to look at how we do things. And we do have a very structured peer review process that very open and transparent peer review, stock assessment that is handed off to a group of independent scientists called the CIE, and that is our peer review process. So one of the things we were discussing at the executive committee is if our process now has the stock assessment give you the present mortality and present abundance of stocks, and the PDT takes that peer-reviewed assessment, why can't the PDT be, like it is now, the body that updates the assessment with current data and makes the recommendation on acceptable annual catch limit? So there may be some room to use our PDT in the equation as opposed to our SSC, and we'll be looking at all that. Another requirement in the Act is to pay a stipend, just like council members are paid, maybe not at the same level, but there now is a requirement that we shall pay SSC members when they meet and also advisory panels when they meet. Now, it doesn't say at what level, but what it does say is pending adequate appropriations. And certainly right now we don't have enough funding to operate and do our required management. So I made it very clear in Washington that we ought to be very careful about pending adequate appropriations until there's a line item that satisfies our work schedule. We shouldn't be paying stipends if we don't have the funds to do our work. But that is a new requirement. Limited access privilege program, Section 303A, is amended. And that's going to be, I think, a lot of work has to be dedicated to that section on the guidelines. Certainly, one of the requirements is that our limited access privilege program shall have an effective system for enforcement, monitoring, and management. Those three things have to be embodied in a limited access program. Then the question becomes, should National Fisheries Service, like we have 10 national standards for overfishing and taking and minimizing bycatch and community impacts and all our 10 national standards promoting safety, should there also be national standards for limited access programs, IFQs, community-based quota, sectors, should there be national standards on what should enforcement be within a SAP or within a limited access program? What should the level of monitoring be? What should the level of management be? So we talked about having national standards for LAPS, which, again, could be an awful long time to develop. The new Magnuson Act talks about who's eligible to participate in a limited access program, and it talks about fishing communities, and it talks about regional fishery associations. Okay. Well, where do our sectors come in? When we do a sector, is it a fishing community or is it a recreational fishery association? Well, it can't be a recreational fishery association because they're not authorized regional fishery association, because they're not allowed to receive an initial allocation of quota. So you must have an individual quota in order to form a group under the regional fishery association rules. But a fishing community, a community like they have in Alaska, a CDQ, they can have an initial allocation. So we have to be very careful. Magnuson did not define what a sector is, but they mentioned sector a lot. So one of the terms of reference you'll see when we discuss on Thursday is what is a sector? And we've got to be very careful how we define what a sector is so that we make sure it fits into the fishing community side of the coin instead of the regional fishery association, because we do allocate an initial quota to our sectors. Another thing that's new in the Act is that there is a mandatory requirement that there are cost recovery fees for an LAPP to cover costs of management, data collection, and enforcement. This was pretty controversial at the meeting, but it means every LAP that we create and every sector, which is a LAP, that we create will have to develop management costs, data collection costs, and enforcement costs, and they must be borne by the participants. So that's new. It's a new management requirement that we have to figure out what those costs are, and then it's a burden on the industry to pay those costs. Now, existing, there is a waiver of existing sectors and existing LAPs. You don't necessarily, basically in the Act says, you don't necessarily have to collect from those in existence. But I would imagine the council would have to look long and hard if there's a new LAP, LAPP, in Amendment 16, and they're going to have to charge costs for enforcement and management. I think at the same time you'd want to charge the other sectors for the same thing. Otherwise, it wouldn't be quite fair. I know John doesn't like that. But anyway, so there are costs that will be recovered from sectors and LAPs. It mentions in the LAPs the council shall consider auctions, but again, there's no real description or standardization for auctions across the councils. As you know, many of the, there is a referendum requirement for IFQs, not for sectors. They separated sectors from IFQs, so there is a two-thirds referendum requirement in New England only for IFQs. In the Gulf of Maine, any referendum in the Gulf of Maine, the secretary must publish guidelines and voting eligibility requirements. How should we consider crew participation in the development of a referendum? And there's also a six-month transition. So any of these LAP requirements, for instance, the cost of recovery fees and anything else, referendum, any of these other requirements are waived for 6 months, okay? The president signed the Magnuson Act on January 11th. So if we bring to the council's table in June IFQs for the general category scallop fishery, which is our intent now, we can vote that in without a referendum. Now, that's the initial guidance from Washington, is that we have a six-month waiver, and it's right into the Act. So we'll be looking to bring all that work we've done on sectors, on IFQs for the general category fishery. We'll be looking at bringing that to the council for a final vote in June so that we can enjoy some of this waiver that's built into the Act. Lastly, another important part of the new Magnuson Act is the environmental review process. We look at that as a great opportunity to clarify and shorten our documents. Basically, the Act said, you know, a Department of Commerce, a National Marine Fisheries Service, work with CEQ and try to combine NEPA and Magnuson Act requirements so that it isn't so complex. And we had the one of the experts from CEQ responsible for NEPA compliance at our meeting in Washington, and she basically said words to the effect, most government, if not all government EISs, if it's a very simple action or about 100 pages in length, if it's a complex action, there are about 300, 350. And all our jaws dropped at the all the ED's jaws dropped because most every region, their environmental impact statements are thousands of pages. And literally we all said that they're too cumbersome for the public to understand. Many of them are too cumbersome for the council to understand all the, the depth of analysis and everything. So we wanted to get back to very simple EISs, very simple plans, very simple alternatives that are understood and analyzed and voted on. And so we've got a group, three executive directors from Alaska, Pacific, and I think Dan Furlong is working with a working group at NIMS to try to bring NEPA and MSA under one umbrella. And our intent is to have NEPA, MSA consume NEPA so that we do everything under the Magnuson Act and don't all of a sudden vote under the Magnuson Act and then develop a process to develop federal regulations under NEPA. It gets very cumbersome. So this is a great opportunity to streamline our process and to make our documents much shorter and more understandable. So those were the four main thrusts of the Magnuson Act. There were some other requirements that are just germane to New England, and one of them was a Framework 42 study to look at the social and economic impacts and data in Framework 42. The service had 1 month to comply with that requirement, and I understand that report is either complete or nearly completed. Groundfish determination, there was a requirement for the National Marine Fisheries Service to review in New England all the different state regulations to see how they comport with the federal regulations of groundfish. There was a requirement for NIMS to establish council member training, which they've done already. They had 6 months to do that. A requirement to examine and make improvements to the experimental fishery program, 6 months to complete that. There was a requirement for the Mid-Atlantic Council and the New England Council to get together and prepare a report on how each of us use our liaison officers like Jimmy or our Mid-Atlantic liaison. Should they vote? Do they vote? How do they bring the message from the other council? And that's gearing more towards, Dan and I have talked about that, and that's looking at, I think, trying to have an alternative to having New York on our council and Rhode Island on the Mid-Atlantic Council. And so we're looking at how we could better utilize our liaison officers. NIMS is required within 12 months to look at capacity among the 20 worst fisheries in the nation and identify the 20 worst in terms of capacity. There's a requirement for a recreational fishing registry program to be put in place within 24 months. And there's also a 24-month requirement to look at make improvements to MRFs based on the National Academy Science Review. So that's basically it. We'll be working. In fact, we have a two-day meeting with our staff and NIMS staff to go through Magnuson Act and ongoing plans. We're meeting March 22nd and 23rd. In Gloucester with Pat's staff, and we'll bring that to the council in April. And again, probably at least 18 months to do the guidelines like they did for Sustainable Fisheries Act, but recognize we can't afford to wait 18 months. We have to do the best we can to make sure we comply with this without guidelines in the short term. That's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks, Paul. Questions? John Nelson, then Terry.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chairman. Paul, is it your sense that if we come up with, for the New England Council, comes up with some definitions that it can be unique to the council, New England Council, or does it, and I'll just use it as an example. I know we're going to talk about it later, but if we define sectors, can that be specific to the New England area, or does it have to actually be a countrywide definition of sectors?
Those were exactly the questions that staff brought forward were exactly like that. And in talking with Washington, they recognized for some, in some instances, you'll need national standards and a national definition. But in with others, they want to make sure that the regional differences are addressed. So, again, no specific answer except that, you know, we may be able to. And no other. Right now, I think the onus is upon us to develop, because Magnuson Act didn't develop a definition of sectors. We have to do that. We should do it very carefully so it fits into a category that we can allocate an initial amount of quota like we do now.
Terry.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Paul, going back to the fishing community allocations, did I hear you correctly that there is no provision for bringing history into the equation? You said that if you said under regional fishery associations there would be a provision for individual quotas, and I was unclear what you're advising us on the community.
They define communities and they define regional fishery associations under LAPS, and they say what is one and what is the other. The difference is a regional fishery association cannot be allocated an initial quota. In other words, all the members of that form a regional fishery association must already have an IFQ. But a community can form and be given an allocation based on history. It's a small
distinction. You know, that's the thing. Based on history was the component I was missing.
Sure.
I was wondering where it was going to come from.
Yeah.
Sally, and then Rip.
Yeah, two questions. First one is on NEPA and the discussion that you might have had down in Washington. My understanding and read of the new statute is that it's strictly a way to streamline and bring Magnuson into line with NEPA more so, and that compliance with NEPA is still required of all actions taken under the Magnuson Act. Is that where your discussion left it?
I think our discussion left was that it was an avenue to, the way it was worded, it was an avenue for the councils to develop one process. We have two processes now, and it didn't really matter whether we would like to see the Magnuson process trump the NEPA process, as long as it has all the elements of NEPA, okay, and do it under Magnuson. However, the overall intent is one process.
The second question is about the term accountability. I guess I was surprised to hear that there was a lot of discussion about that word, because that word is pretty clear in my mind. My understanding of the debate over Magnuson reauthorization is that the annual catch limits was inserted into the statute largely because of the management systems that we have tried and failed in some cases to establish in New England. So when I see the term annual catch limits and that we have to have accountability to achieve those annual catch limits, it seems pretty straightforward to me that it's a matter of accounting, that you have your plus column and your negative column, and they have to balance. So if you can maybe clarify why that discussion was as lengthy as it was, because in reading the new statute, it seems pretty clear to me.
Initially, at least all the other councils view it as hard tax, you know. But but it really isn't even hard tax, because a lot of them don't close down fisheries, and a lot of them don't because of recreational data. Recreational data often is not made available until well after the fishing year. So we talked about that at length. Recreational fishing data, look at even our cod fishery, that could be upwards of 20-30%. We don't get that recreational data in long after we get, our commercial data. So we talked about, it is hard tax. That's one way to do it. But there may be other ways to build in catch limits that not to exceed them by having paybacks. And if you're over, you pay back the exact amount. But I think it would have been easy to say, yep, that's a hard tack. But in reality, what do you do with recreational fisheries? So there's got to be other avenues if you can't make it work for recreational fisheries. And let me say that when the guidelines are finally out, it may be hard tax. But right now there was no definitive answer at that meeting that it was hard tax, that it could. It may be all of the above. Triggers, defaults, backstops, paybacks, but nothing definitive.
Rip Cunningham.
There's another rip here? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question probably goes to either Gene or Pat, and as Paul has indicated, and it seems quite obvious that with Amendment 16, we're going to run into some of these questions concerning IFQs and referendums and what is an IFQ. With our time schedule, we don't have the luxury to wait 18 months to get some answers to this. And as we are pushing ahead with this and going down this road, I have to assume that there has to be some service thoughts, preliminary thoughts on where ultimately we're going to end up on some of these questions. And I hope that as we do that, we can get as clear an indication as possible from the service that we're either going in the right direction or we're obviously going in the wrong direction. And I know that's a pretty open-ended question comment, but certainly the multi-species committee doesn't want, and the council, I don't think, wants to get to the end of this time frame having spent an inordinate amount of time developing a measure which ultimately cannot be instituted.
Yeah, I understand the concern, and we are hoping to be able to give you that guidance specifically as possible. As soon as possible, so that you don't waste any time like this. We're looking at the specific question concerning what qualifies as an IFQ in terms of the options that are now being considered. And so I hope we can give guidance on that at this council meeting when that issue comes up.
So you may have guidance for us on Thursday during the groundfish discussion.
Yes, we may.
Paul.
Just to get back to Sally's question again about accountability measures. There was, I recall now, discussion about the most important thing is to stay within your mortality targets. And that although there is a direct relationship between staying under your TAC with staying, with, you know, meeting your mortality objectives, that the goal is to meet your mortality objective. So there was some discussion there. And the other discussion was that we may be looking at guidelines that require or encourage councils to do risk analysis. You recall that we conducted a risk analysis, our PDT, for the herring, and that those are exactly the type of things that should be built into the council's thoughts about setting annual catch limits and not exceeding them. What is the risk of exceeding your fishing mortality if you set this tack? So we'll be looking at, and that group that's looking at national guidelines, there may be some guidelines on conducting risk analysis to stay within your fishing mortality by setting appropriate tax based on risk.
Anyone else? Phil and then Dave Gaethel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question goes back to the SSCs and how we're going to use them and whatever. And my question would be, from what I understand, almost everybody's SSC is different. And Northwest being the poster child for this one, I'm kind of wondering if we shouldn't be looking at, if we're going to have to be going down the road of SSCs, that the makeup of the SSC be something similar to the Northwest or something along them lines. So I wonder if we need to be looking at that.
Yeah, I think as we have these discussions, that's definitely something we're going to look at. So. Dave Gaethel.
Yeah, one of our most immediate needs is probably whiting, based on the plans we're developing. So who's going to provide the advice on how to set tax on index-based species? Is it going to be the SSC? Is it going to be Washington through guidelines? Is it going to be PDTs? This is an immediate question that needs pretty much an immediate answer within the next couple months.
Well, we've been wrestling with data poor stocks for years now, and Jim mentioned they're going to have a data poor workshop in July, hopefully May, but we really need to wrestle with coming up with adequate tax for index-based stocks. Where you saw monkfish, how you know we can be just about rebuilt. And, you know, a few years later, we're below the line again. And it's because it's based on, you know, we have inadequate data. And when you use the index, they could be all over the place depending on how much fish you catch in the survey. So we recognize that. Hopefully the data pool workshop will give us some better ideas how to set annual catch limits. That's all I can say. But it has to be done.
Now, Dave, I'll just remark that I had sidebar conversations at the chairman's meeting down in Washington about what we term data poor stocks, and what we would consider a data poor stock is pretty much a standard stock assessment in other regions. So just throw that out there. Anyone else? Anyone in the audience? Rodney, do you need a couple of minutes to get ready for your? All right. We'll take a 10-minute. We're way ahead of schedule. 10-minute break. Everybody can take their seats.